This morning we're going to look at Hagar in the Bible, and we're going to think about how she speaks in one sense to the modern world. It's a very up-to-date story, the story of Hagar. She was a one-parent family. She was an abused woman. She was oppressed. She fell into some of the problems that we see in society today. So she's got a lot to say to the modern world. And I've given the heading to this study, Hagar Speaks to the Modern World, Preparing Bible Studies for Muslim Women, Designer Studies Custom Made. And I would urge you to do this. We're short of materials to use, so make some of your own, and then when you've tested them, give the rest of us the benefits of, in some way or another, by circulating your experience or your studies. We need new materials. And tomorrow I'll try and bring you an example of something new that one student last summer created, maybe I'll put it on the reserve shelf, but it shouldn't be photocopied. If there's anything shouldn't be photocopied, I'll put a note. I do acknowledge a lot of inspiration for this study from Karen Darnell, and the article that she wrote was The Identity of a Muslim Woman, Finding Oneself in the Religion of Hagar. And that's 25 pages, I think, in her essay. So let's look now at Genesis 16. And maybe our friend here would read verse 1.
Okay. Now Sarah, Abram's wife, had borne him no children, but she had an Egyptian maidservant named Hagar. So you want me to continue on?
No, I think I'd like you just to stop at verse 1. That was at verse 1?
Mm-hmm.
Good. First, I should say that maybe Hagar is one of the outstanding women of the Bible, but we're put off by the bad press that she seems to get in Galatians. If you remember in Galatians what's said about her, Galatians 4, 21 to 31. But I think we might pay more attention to her, especially in the Genesis account. And she's got a lot to say to us and to the Muslims of our time, Muslim women particularly, in regard to identity, relationships, polygamy, abuse, divorce, and some more things. Now, her name, Hagar, does anybody know what it comes from and what it means? Or Hagar? It actually is in Egyptian Arabic. It's pronounced, I think, Hajar. Hagar. Yes, it would be. It would be Hajar. It would be. Sorry, Hagar. Hajar. It's pronounced. So let me just show this on the. Write it down, because I want you to see the radicals here. Let's take the radicals. We were talking about radical letters the other day, or the other week, or the other month, or whenever you happen to be listening. Hagar, or Hajar, all right. Now let's say that the G and the J are the same, because it's in Arabic, words are pronounced slightly differently in different parts of the Arab world. So you may get the word Hajj in Urdu. You will get Hajj in some parts of the Arabic-speaking word, and in Egypt it will be Hag. So you see J and G is interchangeable in that pronunciation. Okay, now the radical letters here are H, J, or G, and R. This word is connected with another word that you do know, even if you can't connect it quickly. Can you think of it? The word Hijra, Hijra or Hijrat in Urdu, Hijra in Arabic. It is the flight or migration. It's the flight, of, especially used for the flight of Muhammad in 632 from Mecca to Medina. And that is the historic start of... I think that's the historic start of Islam. So Islam did not start when Muhammad was born. It started when he migrated from Mecca to Medina. Correct, EJ? Right, good. And but Muslims, of course, think Islam is the original faith of mankind. And so Adam was the first Muslim. If you think of it in terms of the first one prophet who submitted, the first in human being. So this word, Hijra, and the word Hagar or Hajar are linked. And the word actually, in Hijra, you get Mahajireen, Mahajir, refugee, and Mahajireen, refugees. So, and the name, this name Hajar, is found on a seal. It was found in Jericho by archaeologists. There's a name on a seal there. It could be a nickname. It could be refugee, sort of little refugee or something. It may have been a camp name that was given. According to Al-Bukhari, that there are 9 volumes of Al-Bukhari, as you've probably found out, in Hadith number 578, a tyrant gave Hagar as a servant to Sarah. But we find in this account in Genesis that Hagar finds identity through her relation to the Creator God, the covenant God of Abraham. We'll see this as we go through. Verse 2.
Okay. So she said to Abram, "The Lord has kept me from having children. So go, sleep with my maidservant. Perhaps I can build a family through her."
This was Sarai's initiative. She goes by the name Sarai here. Until later, she's given the name Sarah. And in a way, she's blaming God for not having children. She's concerned with her own honor rather than with God's honor. This seems to be her position. Verse 3.
Okay. And then Abram agreed to what Sarah said. So after Abram had been living in Canaan 10 years, Sarah, his wife, took her Egyptian maidservant Hagar and gave her to her husband to be his wife.
Yeah, thank you. It's Sarai, I think, here still, isn't it?
Oh, Sarai, I'm sorry.
Hagar appears as a non-person. She's not spoken to. She appears to be an object under Sarai's control. In verse 3, we find that the maidservant becomes the second wife, and Sarai plans to build on Hagar, according to the custom, to build her family on Hagar. Verse 3.
Okay. I just read verse 3. You mean verse 4?
I'm sorry. Yes, you... Yeah. Okay. Just read verse 3 again.
Okay, read verse 3 again. So after Abram had been living in Canaan 10 years, Sarai, his wife, took her Egyptian maidservant Hagar and gave her to her husband to be his wife.
Yes, to be his wife. Not all translations will say wife. They may say concubine. They may say something else. But in Hebrew, the word for wife is Isha. It's I-S-H-S-H-A-H. That's in transliteration. And it's not the word for concubine, which is pilagish. I probably pronounce it incorrectly, but never mind. You spell it as a transliteration, P-I-L-E-G-E-S-H. So it is the word wife that is used. So Abraham, like many people of his time, but also like many Muslims, has two wives. Verse 4.
Okay. He slept with Hagar, and she conceived. When she knew she was pregnant, she began to despise her mistress.
Now, you see this. When she got pregnant, She felt the honor and spiritual joy as Abraham's wife and prospective mother of a great nation, but she despised Sarai. So she went from the honor of being chosen to the pride of despising Sarai. Verse 5.
Okay. Then Sarai said to Abram, "You are responsible for the wrong I'm suffering. I put my servant in your arms, and now that she knows she is pregnant, she despises me. May the Lord judge between you and me."
So Sarai wanted to expel Hagar from the camp. Abraham loved Hagar, and it was illegal for him to expel her, according to the Code of Hammurabi, section 146. So he was in difficulties here. Verse 6.
"Your servant is in your hands," Abram said. "Do with her whatever you think best." Then Sarai mistreated Hagar, so she fled from her.
Abraham gave Hagar to Sarai. Is it Abram there, or it's Abram?
Abram.
Abram. Yeah. No, it's, I also am using Abraham. We should remember that their names are not changed till later. So Abram gave Hagar to Sarai to treat her as she wished. Even Abram could not treat his wives equally. And you know the injunction in the Quran is treat your wives equally if you can have one to four. And that's in the Quran, Surah 4, verse 3. So Sarai afflicted Hagar, looking down on her. As a woman, Sarai should have respected Hagar. That was her arrangement, after all. Hagar fled from what she saw in Sarah's eyes. She knew that she was in for trouble, and she knew the desert route to Egypt. She was Egyptian, and so she fled. Now, in verses 4 to 7, we read three things particularly. We see false pride, false blame, and false neutrality. So we find, I think it's, we could say, Hagar, false pride, or Sarah. I'd have to look back here. But anyway, look for false pride, false blame, false neutrality among these three: Sarai, Abram, and Hagar. Verse. Would you read verses 7 to 8?
Okay. The angel of the Lord found Hagar near a spring in the desert. It was the spring that is beside the road to Shur. And he said, "Hagar, servant of Sarai, where have you come from and where are you going?" "I'm running away from my mistress Sarai," she answered.
So this is the first visit by an angel in the Bible. And this spring is, Muslims call it Zamzam, and they still bring water back when they go on pilgrimage from the spring of Zamzam. Obviously, it wouldn't be in the same place because Zamzam's in Arabia. The angel's first word was, what was the angel's first word? What was the angel's first word?
Hagar.
So this is the first time anybody's used her name. And this is the representative of God, and he used her name. For the first time, somebody calls her by name. God knows us and he finds us. She began to forget her pride. If God cared enough to send his angel to talk to her, she would listen. "Where have you come from and where are you going?" That's what she's asked. And she says, "From the face of my mistress Sarai." She gives some respect to Sarai, my mistress. But she draws attention to her own growing identity by saying, "My mistress." "Where are you going?" She doesn't have an answer to that. She didn't want to bear her son in Egypt, outside the camp where people didn't know God. Identity tells us where we are going. Identity begins by asking God, and destination and purpose become clear. Verse 9.
Okay. Then the angel of the Lord told her, "Go back to your mistress and submit to her."
So this is the angel's second speech. There was some dysfunction in Abram's camp, But God said, go back and submit. That's the true Islam in one sense. Islam without a capital, Islam, submission. Hagar must return to the eyes and hands of her oppressor. Hagar would raise her son where he could learn about God and submission. If she had stayed as a refugee in Egypt, he wouldn't learn these things. Hagar, now this is an issue that many Muslim women face. When to submit and when to stay. Sometimes they feel that things are so difficult that they must leave. When to leave. And we can see it. Twice Hagar left. Once she did it off her own initiative, and another time she did it under God's guidance. When to submit and when to stay. When to leave. A question for abused women. Verse 10.
Okay. The angel added, I will so increase your descendants that they will be too numerous to count.
So that's a promise, God's promise. Verses 11 to 12 is an annunciation, and in three parts. You look for the three parts of this annunciation.
Okay. The angel of the Lord also said to her, you are now with child, and you will have a son. You shall name him Ishmael, for the Lord has heard of your misery. He will be a wild donkey of a man, and his hand will be against everyone, and everyone's hand against him. And he will live in hostility toward all his brothers.
Now you notice the annunciation. There are three things. It's the annunciation of a son, the naming of the child, and a prediction about his future. He will have a possession. And Hagar, through this annunciation, will now be included with such women as Hannah, to whom an annunciation was given, with Elizabeth and Mary. You can compare this annunciation with the one to Mary. First, the naming by Allah. And the naming, it's very interesting to see that it means, Ishmael means God hears. It's the word Shama, hearing in Arabic. Shama, you could transliterate, hearing. It's one of the seven attributes of early Islamic theology. The seven attributes are hearing, seeing, life, purpose, will, speaking, knowing. So God is all hearing, all seeing. He is life, he is purpose, he is will, he is eternally the speaker. God in his capacity is the eternal speaker, speaks the eternal word, which is the Quran. And knowing. So hearing is one of these. And the name of her child will always remind her that God hears. So he's a very important person, Ishmael. And God hears the oppressor as well as the oppressed. That's of an interesting point. He is as concerned for the afflictor as much as for the afflicted one. Abuse must stop. God hears. And then verse 13.
Okay. She gave this name to the Lord who spoke to her. You are the God who sees me. For she said, I have now seen the one who sees me.
That's a most interesting verse, very important verse. He is the one who sees me. Basir is the word, B-A-S-I-R. That's one of the seven attributes of early Islamic theology, hearing and then seeing. Basir. So God sees her and she sees God. Here we see the beginning of the continuing of a two-way relationship. Verses 15 to 16, miss out
14 to 16. That is why the well was called Bir La Ro. How do you say that?
Just have a go.
Bir La Ro, okay. And it is still there between Kadesh and Bered. So Hagar bore Abram a son, and Abram gave the name Ishmael to the son she had born. Abram was 86 years old when Hagar bore him Ishmael.
So here we've got then the name of the son, Ishmael, hearing, and the name of the well in memory of the encounter when Hagar is aware of this two-way relationship having the word Beseer as part of the name, seeing. I won't let us read, but you could read at your leisure, Genesis 17, verses 15 to 16, God's promise to Abraham. Verse 17, Abraham took it badly. Verse 18, he prays, oh, that Ishmael might live before thee. And so there's that section. And verse 20, as for Ishmael, says God, I have heard thee. But let's go on to 21, Genesis 21, verse 9.
But Sarah saw that the son whom Hagar the Egyptian had borne to Abraham was mocking.
So Sarah saw the son of Hagar the Egyptian, whom she had borne unto Abraham, mocking. So Sarah would have interpreted Hagar's presence at the party as a threat to Isaac's inheritance. Verse 10.
And she said to Abraham, get rid of that slave woman and her son, for that slave woman's son will never share in the inheritance with my son Isaac.
So this was a great problem for Abraham. God reassures him in verses 11 to 12. And if you listen here, you'll see he reassures Abraham about this family problem on four areas. He says, don't worry, do what Sarah tells you. Through Isaac, your offspring will be reckoned, but Ishmael is your son also. Verses 11 to 12.
Mm-hmm. The matter distressed Abraham greatly because it concerned his son. But God said to him, do not be so distressed about the boy and your maidservant. Listen to whatever Sarah tells you, because it is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned.
In the next verse, verse 14, we find Abraham, he's not stingy, he was generous, but he did what God said, and God told him he would care, God himself would care for Hagar and Ishmael, and they had experienced enough of God to know this as well. So there was no need to give them extra things to carry, keep your luggage light. But Abraham and Hagar trusted the God who hears and sees. But again, Hagar becomes a refugee, like many Muslim women too, especially in places like Afghanistan and out of Afghanistan. Hagar again becomes a refugee and got lost, but God guided her to Beersheba. This is verse 14, please.
Mm-hmm. Early the next morning, Abraham took some food and a skin of water and gave them to Hagar. He set them on her shoulders and then sent her off with the boy. She went on her way and wandered in the desert of Beersheba.
Hagar brought the dying Ishmael to the feet of God under the bush. He must have been a very wasted and weak 17-year-old Ishmael. She could carry him. He must have been practically dying. Verse 15.
Yes, when the water in the skin was gone, she put the boy under one of the bushes.
But Hagar refused to accept Ishmael's death. Verse 16.
Then she went off and sat down nearby, about a bowshot away, for she thought, I cannot watch the boy die. And as she sat there nearby, she began to sob.
And then God heard, God who hears, and saw, the God who sees. Verse 17.
God heard the boy crying, and the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, what is the matter, Hagar? Do not be afraid. God has heard the boy crying as he lies there.
God confirmed the covenant promised, verse 18.
Lift the boy up and take him by the hand, for I will make him into a great nation.
And then the wonderful verse, verse 19, God opened her eyes and she saw a well of waters. This is not a miracle of water, but a miracle of seeing, spiritual seeing. Hagar gave Ishmael a drink from the spring and he partook of his mother's vision. Verse 19.
Then God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water. So she went and filled the skin with water and gave the boy a drink.
And we are reminded that out of our innermost being, according to John 3, verses 37 to 39, can flow rivers of living water. So there is a very deep spiritual dimension here. The God supplied the water, but it was a miracle of seeing. And we could explore even more if we had time and in our leisure how much Hagar has to say to the single mother, to the abused woman, to the divorcee, how much she can say to modern society and to modern women, and to particularly to Muslim women. Now, when you've read this story and this account, this I prefer to call it a record because it's a true record. So maybe you've read it quite a number of times, but maybe you haven't thought of it quite in this way. So we have to start looking at the scripture and thinking of it how we could share with a Muslim sister something that's very relevant to her and actually quite relevant to our world in general. And Hagar has much to say. And because she's mentioned in the traditions and she's very well known in Islamic thinking and record, people will want to pursue a study of Hagar. So I invite you to do some more reflection and to add to this. You can add to what you've perhaps thought about this morning, and you tailor-make your own Bible studies for the particular woman that you've got. So you, with you, that you're sharing with and studying with, maybe if she's someone who is despised by her mistress or employer, then you can put greater emphasis on that. If she is someone who is becoming aware of her identity and starting to find her full identity in her relationship with God, and therefore her proper identity in relation to other people, you can emphasize this. And if her mind is spiritually very open, then you can go further and look at other passages in the New Testament. So maybe we tend to have bad press about Hagar from St. Paul, but he's making a different point. He's talking about the child of of promise and the child of the law. He's talking about some other issue, and he's leaving aside everything else because he's making that point. But these points are extremely relevant, as you see. And so please go in for custom-made work, for designer studies, whatever you like to call it. Be creative and put it for the person that you're working with. You will learn from them and they will learn from you. And then you will both learn together and come to understand more the God who hears and the God who sees, the God who helps any woman or any man come to full identity as a servant and a friend of God, and as one who takes his or her place in modern society.